Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in and listening here to Suspense Radio One-on-One, of course brought to you by Suspense Magazine and partnered with PartnersInCrimeTours.net. This is a tour stop for authors that are on tour with Partners in Crime, and we are pleased today to bring in Chris Patchell and with her latest book called Deadly Lies. It's the first in a new series, so we are pleased to bring on Chris right now. So, Chris, we want to thank you so much for coming on today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
So, like we just mentioned, Deadly Lies is now the first book coming out, or is out, in a new series. It talks about your latest character, the newest one that you just created, called Jill Shannon. So, give us a behind-the-scenes scoop into Deadly Lies.
Well, it's my first book, and so when I decided to write again, I used to write years before when I was in my 20s, and then took a long time off, you know, you have kids, a career, all that kind of stuff. So when I got back to it, I signed up for a class, you know, as most of you do, as this forcing function to actually get you productive. And so a couple days before the class, I look at my husband and go, oh, my God, I probably need some idea of what I'm going to write. And so I said, do you mind if I pitch a couple story ideas by you? And, you know, my husband's always really great about this kind of thing. So he said, sure, I'd love to. And so I sit him down, and I pitch the first story idea. And he looks at me and says, haven't you already done that before? And I look at him and say, well, yeah, but I never finished. And he's like, do you have anything else? So I pitch the next story idea, and he looks at me and goes, no. By the third one, he's checking his phone and probably updating his Facebook status to say, oh, my God, I wish he'd stop. And so the last story idea I have, I'm getting desperate by this, like, please, God, let him like this one. So I pitch a last one, and it's about the idea is a woman who's sitting on her husband's computer, and she sees something. It's an image, and she can't get it out of her head. And so a few days later, she goes back in, and she discovers that he has this whole secret life. And now that she's seen it, she can't look away. And so my husband says, hey, that's really good. I love that. Where do you think it goes? And so we talk a little bit about that. And then I say, but, you know, it's a little bit stereotype. You know, it's always the woman who's discovering that her husband has a secret life. What if it's her? What if she has a secret life? And what if her husband's a cop? What happens if he discovers it, and how far would she go to protect herself and her secrets? So that's really how Jill Shannon and the book Deadly Lies was born. So it's really, you know, a deeper story about deception. Jill has secrets that she's keeping from her husband. You know, it starts off with an affair and then gets a little bit deeper as, you know, her career and her marriage are threatened by the affair. There's an accident, right? She gets out of the situation that she's in, but then she finds out she's not the only one who knows, and then it becomes a story about cover-ups and deception. And then Alex, her husband, who's a cop, has this whole investigation. He's looking into the murder of a teenage girl, and this girl is his ex-girlfriend's sister. And so then he working with his ex-girlfriend, kind of rekindles some of that romance. And so he has a bit of his own secrets going on, you know. So it's really a kind of an in-depth look at deception and the consequences of deception within a marriage. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty fun. It goes some dark places. I like dark.
it would have been kind of funny if he said, wow, that was a good idea. Where'd you get that from? Well, it's kind of real-life situation. So basically, just make, well, what are you talking about? You know, for your husband to tell you what do you mean, real life situation? Just be like, well, you know, you're on your phone not paying attention, so I thought I would say something that was real life.
I know, something that scares the crap out of you, right? Well, we joked all the time about, you know, my day job, I'm in tech, and I work in a satellite office in Seattle. Home base is in San Jose, right, which kind of mirrors a little bit of Jill's tech life, too, right? There's, you know, she's working in a satellite office and travels to San Jose, which is where she does some of her less savory things, we'll just say. And so, you know, my husband every once in a while, when I'm talking about the story, would go, hold it. Don't you stay at the Fremont? Don't you do this? Don't you do that? And we joke how, you know, he jokes that 90% of our life is in the book. And, you know, I have to heartily disagree. I have never had an affair. I've never killed anybody. But, yes, some of the recipes that she cooks are in the book. And some of the arguments we've had as a married couple, I might have lifted a thing or two from those, I admit.
Yeah. Well, but then again, if the book is about lies and deceit, it's not like you would come clean and say that you have killed somebody.
Yeah, there is that plausible deniability.
Yeah,
I say
that
every character is, you know, fictional creations in my head, I just got to say.
So it sounded like that you thought of the plot first, then you kind of thought of the characters. Am I right in that?
Yeah, that seems to be my creation process is, you know, I think about an idea and this idea kind of sparks the genesis of the story and then everything else spawns from there.
So then when you did decide that this is the kind of storyline and the plot that you were going to go on, how is then the creation part of having to now bring characters into your story, and why did you choose Jill Shannon as the one that would be the one that would lead you going forward?
Oh, well, you know, it's a funny thing. Jill spoke to me right away, and, you know, being raised a nice Canadian girl who, you know, never says anything mean, I have to admit, Jill's a little bit of an alter ego for me, and so I found it very cathartic to write from her point of view. Her voice seemed to come to me very easily. Alex was a little bit harder, right? Alex is kind of your classic, he's very loyal, he has a strong sense of duty, and so when I started to write his chapters, because the book is written, you know, with alternating chapters between Jill's voice and Alex's voice and kind of takes them on their separate journeys that join near the end and has this explosive ending. So Alex's chapters were really hard for me to write at first. It took me a long time to get his voice in my head. And one of my writing instructors said, okay, so from now until you get it, all you write are Alex chapters. And it's like, oh, okay, right? And at first it's really hard. But eventually, you know, I got his voice. And then by the end of the book, I loved writing Alex chapters just as much as Jill. So it was kind of fun writing from a guy's point of view.
Nice. And when you decided to sit down and figure out, okay, I'm going to start writing a thriller or, you know, thriller suspense mystery, kind of has a little bit of elements of a lot of different things going on. What was the most difficult thing for you to actually maybe get yourself going, or what kind of difficulties did you incur, you know, going through the process of trying, you know, to get the book finally finished?
Oh, you know, I think it was on the second draft I decided to change the ending. And when I changed the ending, I realized in order to make it plausible, I'm going to have to go through and rewrite huge chunks of the story. And so I did because I thought it was the right thing to do, right? And so I did the hard work. I sat there and, you know, Jerry Honeywell is one of the bad guys in the story. And so one day at lunch, I just sat down and I thought, okay, I need to write a character sheet on Jerry Honeywell. Who is he? What's his past? Right? What's his story? So that I understand how he, you know, how his role fits into the rest of it, and how I can make that a bigger part of the book in its entirety. And so I met up with my husband for lunch that day, and he said, "So what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm writing Jerry Honeywell's story." And he's like, "Oh." So we start brainstorming, and we're in this pretty restaurant in Seattle on the waterfront. And, you know, as we're talking about, we're getting kind of excited. Our voices are getting louder. And, you know, people start looking at us, and then they start moving away, tables farther away. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, maybe we should be talking quieter. I don't know. But that was it. It was realizing that at a certain point, you actually have to rip it apart and get rid of big chunks of what you've already written to make the story right. And, you know, it took me a lot, you know, a lot longer to finish the book as a result of having done it. But I still think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think, and that's the important thing is that you realize that you do have to go back and kind of rewrite. And I think that a lot of our authors, especially starting out, that they try to fit that round, you know, peg into that square hole, and it doesn't really work. Because they're like, well, I don't know if they want to go back and take the time to have to change everything. They just kind of rush it through and, you know, just want to get it out.
Oh, that's totally it. I didn't want it to be like this hand of God coming in from nowhere and kind of doing the big ending. I wanted the ending to make sense, right? And in order to do that, you have to put all those threads through it and continue escalating that part of the story as well. So when it comes to a conclusion, everybody goes, well, crap, I didn't see that coming. But, you know, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and I just did a big blog post about beginnings and endings of books. And there are two endings that I brought up in particular. And one was a movie, or one was a TV show, one was a book, and it was The Sopranos, and then the way that the Dark Tower series ended by Stephen King. And I said, right when it happened, people were screaming about The Sopranos, I can't believe it ended that way, I can't believe it did that. But when you look back at it, you really sit there and go, that's probably the only way it could have ended. Because did you really want all the closure, did you to come in and have them, you know, did you really want to see him get shot, did you really need that? Or did you just need to say, it's closed, now whatever happens, it's kind of up to your imagination?
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea, right, that not everything has to be tied up in a pretty bow. I think that's one of the fun things about Deadly Lies is, you know, girls aren't all made of sugar and spice and everything nice, and not everything needs to be in a pretty bow. And so when, you know, a friend of mine who read the book said, I can't believe you ended it like that. And I'm like, but how else would you have ended it, right? And so I started to walk through some of my thought process, and she says, oh, you know, now that you talk about it that way, I get it. You're totally right. I see why you did what you did, right? Because it really makes sense from a character standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that that's the important thing, that while you're talking about the book here, that when people read it, if they don't get it, but then they'll understand, well, you know what, I guess that's the only way that it probably could have ended to make sense. Otherwise, it just wouldn't have been right, and it just wouldn't have felt right. And
you got to stay true to your characters.
And like we mentioned off the air, this is going to be part of a series, and I think you said this is going to be a 3-book series. So you have to think about how all of that's going to roll, since it's going to continue. This is not a standalone. You're not ending it. So basically, when book 2 comes, it's going to be a pickup from wherever maybe book 1 left off, or you might 6 months or a year after, however you want to do it. How do you see that series coming about in your head? And do you think 3 books is enough, or is it or is it not enough? You know what I mean?
That is a really good question. So when I think about the Jill series, it's really a 3-part redemption story. And so Act 1 is the hard part, right, where she's becoming who she is. And then Book 2 is really about, you know, can she keep her secrets hidden? She started this whole new life, right, in Phoenix, which is about as opposite climate from a climate standpoint as Seattle, right? And I kind of wanted to mirror emotional states with where the books are set. And so, you know, it starts there. She has this whole new life, and can she keep it, right, because she really wants to put everything behind her. But, you know, secrets have a way of getting out. And so, you know, things don't always go as well as you'd like. And then the third part is really the redemption of her and what she has to give up to make things right. And so that was about the time I decided to change the ending, was when I realized that this is just a longer story arc. And so that's why you do the hard work to make sure that story arc works out.
And, of course, you know, always in book, since you do going to have a series, there's always questions that you have that you might not have answered. But that doesn't mean that they won't get answered coming up in 2 or 3. I mean, otherwise, you would just have basically 3 standalone books. I mean, things have to be going. So what secondary characters? I like to talk about secondary characters because those are the ones that really kind of drive the book and kind of keep things going. Otherwise, you're just going to have Castaway with Tom Hanks, and, you know, that's not for everybody.
Yeah.
So what secondary characters, or one in particular, had a bigger voice than you thought they would have while you were writing it? Which one kind of surprised you?
Let's see. Emma, right? So Emma is Jill's sister-in-law, and she has a very small part in the first book, but she plays a much more pivotal role in the second book. And, you know, I was talking to Kevin O'Brien, New York Times bestselling
author. Oh, yeah, good old Kevin.
He's a friend of mine, right? He's got a fabulous sense of humor, and we're talking about the second Jill book. And so I was telling him kind of what I had planned with some of the secondary characters, including Emma. And, you know, he was amazed that every one of my characters has their own story and an arc, right? And so Emma's story in the second book really plays well into the third book, which is the finale, right? So she has kind of a a hole in her life that then gets filled by the ending of the third book, right? So Emma is one of those characters that I just loved.
So was her bigger part now coming up because of how you felt about her in book one, or was it a conscious effort while you were writing it to go ahead and give her something bigger going on?
Everything with me is about plot, right? So it's one of those, I knew where the story had to go. And Emma in the first book is a reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, right? And so the second book, she has a son, and she's trying to get pregnant, and it's not working out very well for her, and she's quit her job, right? And I think she's very unsatisfied with not working. She feels kind of useless. She doesn't know where her life is going, and that kind of thing. And so I felt very sympathetic for her in the second book. And, you know, I think she also takes a different view of Jill. Her husband, who is Alex's brother, really hates Jill. You know, he looks at her and he thinks that, you know, she's just not a very good person. I think Emma sees more nuance in her, right? And so she's very sympathetic, too, from a mother's perspective about Jill's plight. So it's kind of fun, right, how the different characters view Jill as a main character. And I think that mirrors readers. Some readers who read Jill are really going to like her, right? She's difficult. She's interesting. She's complex. She's not necessarily likable, but she's very interesting in a, I want to say, Hannibal Lecter kind of way.
Oh, nice.
But I know, right? But other people don't, right? And there are a few people that read the book that it's just not their cup of tea, and I totally get it, right? If you don't sympathize with her, if you don't see what she's trying to do, you're not going to like the book, and that's just the way it is. I knew it was risky when I wrote the book from that point of view, but sometimes you got to take the risk that speaks to you.
Well, now let's talk about your journey, because your journey is very interesting. We were talking off air, and you had mentioned something that I really have no idea about, on how the book came about, how you even got published. So can you go into that so people understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, sure. So Deadly Lies, I decided to self-publish. I sent it to a few agents, and of course, because it's written from a really risky point of view, I didn't know what to do with it, right? So I decided to self-publish that one. And then, you know, understanding that it was kind of a risky story to have told, I wasn't sure what kind of reaction I would get to it. So, you know, I wrote the first draft of the second book, and then I put it aside for a little while, and I wrote a different book, and it's called In the Dark. And In the Dark is a story about a mother whose 19-year-old daughter goes missing and her quest to find her. And so In the Dark, when I finished it, I ran it through a new program that Amazon has that's called Kindle Scout. And the idea is that they publish your first 5,000 words, which for me ended up being the first three chapters of the book. And readers can actually go and vote on the books that they think should get published. And so, you know, they post your manuscript. There is a month-long period where people get to vote on your book. And then at the end of the month, Amazon takes a little bit of time to evaluate your book and then decides which ones should be published. And if you get pushed through Scout, then Kindle Press will actually publish your book for you, right? And so that's the route I took with In the Dark.
Very cool.
It's been very interesting, right? I think that this whole rise in indie publishing, right, has really democratized publishing in a way, right? So when readers get to choose books that they want to see published, then it opens the door for more diverse stories. And that's kind of how my writing has been, right? It's been, it is edgier and a little bit more diverse, and I take a lot of risks, right? And I think they're going to pay off.
Yeah, and that's the thing that when you're looking at, you know, taking risks, and taking risks can always work out good, can always work out bad. I mean, there's a lot of great authors that have taken risks, and some have fallen flat, some have not. But you pick yourself back up, and then you realize maybe the mistakes that you made, and you look back. And the one thing that I think that you can also see is social media is so prevalent now that you can see right away the things that people like and the things that people don't like, where before, of course, 30 years ago, before all that, the book would come out and it would sit out there for a year, and then they'd be writing the next and the next one. Well, they wouldn't really get the reaction until maybe three books after the one that people didn't like. So
do you let
social media maybe, do you look at it, do you kind of let it affect how you write because you know what people are interested in, and do you let that creep into your thoughts?
No, but it's definitely a barometer in that when I decided to publish Deadly Lies, I threw it out there and I thought, wow, you know, people could either love it or hate it, right? I wasn't sure what kind of reaction it would get because it is edgy. And I was thrilled. So I think 90% of the reviews that I get on Amazon or Goodreads are very positive. People get it. They like it. It's different. You know, so the response to it was overwhelmingly positive. Now, you know, there are those that hate it, and I totally get it, right? But it was great to see that kind of reaction, and that gave me more, hey, you know, this three-part story arc could really work, right? Because there's enough traction. I think the first book is the hardest one, so if you like that, right, then you're going to like the next two. So it was definitely good in that respect. And, you know, recently, Deadly Lies has won an Indie Reader Discovery Award for Best Fiction. So I was thrilled. I certainly never expected to win anything with this book, and the fact that I did was just awesome.
Yeah, I knew we were going to bring that up too, because your book, you know, did win an award. I did you even know that it was up for one? Did you have to put it in yourself or no?
As an indie author, you do everything yourself. So, yes.
Say that again.
It's
so
the curse and the beauty, right?
Yeah.
It means you do everything yourself, right? So I think about publishing Deadly Lies, right? And, you know, I hired CreateSpace to do the layout of the book because, you know, I'm in technology. I could figure it out, but I also have a busy day job and I have other books I'm working on. So I decided to hire that out. They did it. They did a great job. They wrote the back of the book text, too. And then, you know, you put together your website yourself, you put together your Facebook page yourself, all of those things that you do, you kind of push the rock uphill. And I think it was probably 6 months after I published Deadly Lies. I was at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference, and I happened to walk past this booth, and I saw the Andrea Hearst Literary Agency had a booth that offered marketing services and editing services for independent authors. And so I picked up one of the cards for marketing, and I called the gal about a week after the conference, and really things started to take off at that point. Because, you know, I can write a good book, I can do a lot of the tech back end myself, but marketing it is hard. And so she's really been my partner in getting Deadly Lies off the ground. And since we started working together, lots of good things have happened.
Yeah, I always tell people writing the book is the easy part. Getting marketing it and getting people to buy it, that is the challenge, and that's
absolutely
the hard part. And you mentioned, and this is your first radio interview for the book. You know, you've done a lot of blog and you've done other things. So now that you're into another medium, this is something, of course, that authors typically shy away from a little bit until they're a little bit more seasoned, because you're used to sitting behind the computer and typing. You're not used to getting out there and talking.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I would describe myself as a high-functioning introvert.
That's good.
I'd rather be behind the keyboard, but, you know, in today's world of social media and all that kind of thing. And I kind of figure one of the things I've learned out of this whole writing journey and publishing Deadly Lies and In the Dark and all that stuff is that you have to take risks, and every risk that you take, you get, you know, a little bit more brave about the next one. And so my new thing is I just say yes, and then I worry about everything later. Instead of like, oh, no, I can't do that because blah, blah, blah. I don't let, you know, being shy or being afraid stop me from doing the things that I think I need to do. This whole journey has been a really great experience for me personally and professionally, and so now I just, you know, embrace being a little bit nervous and just take it to the next place.
Yeah. And
yeah.
What is the next place?
Oh, well, so many good things have happened recently, right? So within the span of, I think it was a week and a half, Andrea Hearst signed me as one of her clients, so now I have an agent. I got the Scout publishing deal, and so now Kindle Press is going to publish the book, and I got the Indie Book Award. So that was all within the last few weeks, so it's been just a whirlwind. And so, of course, now my agent is saying, so when's the next book coming? And so I've been heads down finishing my outline and, you know, working on starting work on the next thing. Because now that you have kind of a traditional publishing deal, there's a little bit more pressure to produce. And I I'm very productive as a writer, but I also have a really busy day job and a family, so balancing all that stuff is tough.
Oh, yeah. And
yeah.
What is the future? And so now you're on tour going on right
yep.
now. How much longer do you have going on? And kind of let everybody know, since we only got about a minute left, like where they can find you and the things that you have going on in the future and where they can, you know, see everything that you have going on past the book.
Oh, my Facebook page. So Chris Patchell author site is my Facebook page, and that talks about all the things that are coming up. I'll be at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference in July talking a little bit about my journey as a writer and how the conference played into that, and talking a little bit about, you know, doing a book signing and talking a little bit about what comes next with In the Dark. So that's the best place to look for me. Also, I have a website, chrispatchell.com, that also has stuff coming up. So, you know, I think In the Dark is going to be pretty exciting. I'm thrilled with the book. I think readers are going to love it, too. And so stay tuned. There's lots of good stuff coming.
Well, Chris, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure to speak with you. Again, good luck with the book. Have fun on the tour. And, you know,
thank
we look forward to seeing you in the future. I will be at PNWA this year for the first time. I'll be taking pitches from authors. So I get to hear, because, of course, we have a publishing company,
oh, yeah.
So I get to hear about all of that. So if you're there, I don't know if you're going to be there, but I'll come up, we'll say hello, and you know, just to see what's going on.
I will totally be there. If you're taking pitches, I'll bring you, like, coffee and donuts, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, I'll be doing it at Thriller Fest the week before, and then PNWA the week after, and then I'll be teaching a class in PNWA called Know What You Write. Jeff Ayers will be moderating it, and so we'll have some fun on that, because we do a radio show together called Beyond the Cover, so it'll be good. We'll have a lot of fun. It's not going to be sit there literary, you know, classroom. I like to make it fun and entertaining, and the crowd's going to have to interact.
Yes.
So yeah, it's going to have to be a lot of. They're going to have to interact back with me. I'm not just going to sit there and talk to them, because to me, I find that boring. So.
Yeah, you're not going to lecture.
They might not realize it yet, but they're going to be interacting.
That sounds fun. I will see you there.
All right, Chris, you have a good night or a good day, and we will talk with you later.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is Chris Patchell, and the book is called Deadly Lies. Make sure that you visit chrispatchell.com, PATCHELL.com, for more information on the book and, of course, everything that she has going on. The other thing that we want to let you know is that this month, the radio shows are brought to you by New American Library and the publisher of the most provocative thriller of the year called Eeny Meeny by M.J. Arledge. Lisa Gardner calls it an international bestseller, mesmerizing, and Tammy Hoag says it's white knuckles guaranteed. And that is Eeny Meeny, again. There's a lot of push behind this book. I've heard a lot of information, so make sure you go out and check it out. M.J. Arledge is the author, so we want to make sure that we let you know about that. Of course, you want to check out suspenseradionetwork.com for this and all the information that we have going on with all the radio shows. You can check out Beyond the Cover, Story Blender, Crime and Science Radio, which was just on yesterday with Laura Caldwell. Make sure that you're listening to that. Story Blender comes up this Friday. And then, of course, Beyond the Cover will be on next Monday. We didn't have Nelson DeMille on, but we were able to interview him, and we will play that interview live on this week's show coming up for Beyond the Cover. So until next time, everybody, we want to say again, thank you so much for Chris and everybody over at PartnersInCrimeTours.net for all the terrific work that they do. And we will see you on the next show. Goodbye.